Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian, bringing you theology at warp speed. I'm Matt Anderson.
I'm Ben DiBono.
And we are back!
We are back once again.
I tried to impersonate you.
That's a good one. Yeah. Usually I say the we are back line. Yeah. I guess I was slacking this week, Matt.
I didn't realize it, but that's kind of becoming something we say every week on accident.
Okay.
I don't know if it necessarily needs to be here.
I'll do it on purpose instead of on accident.
And we're back! Yeah, I kind of like it when you do that.
I think I did that after our long hiatus.
Yeah, you did.
And then it kind of stuck last week, I think, maybe.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. But we are back, and we have a great show. Matt, I have been looking forward to this week's episode really since we first talked about doing the Sci-Fi Christian.
Yes, we've been talking about doing this review of Dr. Horrible since the very beginning.
Yeah, and maybe even more than a review. I think, you know, because our reviews tend to be a little short, we're going to really get into analyzing this. I don't even know what we're supposed to call it. It's a little short for a movie. It's not a TV show, yeah. Web series, you know, whatever it is.
You're right, because my notes here I have in front of me say my interpretation. So we're dissecting this movie. The dissection of Dr. Horrible.
Yes.
Okay. Ooh. Not bad, right?
I think you just nailed the title of this one.
Nice. So, yeah, it's going to be a good episode. Really, I mean, I just rewatched it on Friday.
Yep.
It's awesome.
It last night. Yeah. So, it's about 12 hours ago, fresh in my mind.
I listened to the soundtrack 3 times in a row last night.
It's so good. Yeah. I mean, the movie, we could just launch into it right now. But before we get there, we do have a lot of great sci-fi news in store. Kobe, don't you dare skip it this week. We got good stuff for you.
Good.
Should we get to it?
Let's do it.
It's time for sci-fi news.
Beautiful, Matt. Well, as always.
And you also, Ben. Ben, you have some news that's exciting and surprising to start out with.
Yeah, this was, you know, we've talked about George R. R. Martin's novel, Game of Thrones, mm-hmm. how that's been being adapted into an HBO series. Mm-hmm. And the first episode premiered on Sunday.
So just today is Wednesday.
Today is Wednesday, so three short days ago. I had not been a subscriber to HBO, so I was anticipating that I would either have to find it illegally online or wait for the DVD.
Okay.
On Monday evening, I broke down, ordered HBO, and DVR'd the replay. They were doing it at 11 p.m. that night, watched it that night,
wow.
And absolutely loved the pilot.
Really?
I think it's going to be a fantastic series. Very faithful adaptation.
But that's not the news.
The news is that Tuesday, less than 48 hours after the premiere,
I've never heard of this before,
Game of Thrones renewed for its second season.
One episode.
I mean,
the ratings must have been outstanding.
You know, they were good. They weren't, like, the best ever. I think that between the first showing and then they did, like, an encore showing later that night, and between those two, they got, like, 4.2 million viewers.
Okay.
So, you know, good ratings, but I think Boardwalk Empire that had premiered last fall on HBO had something like 5 million viewers, so it wasn't even the record.
Okay, wow. But so what was behind this, do you think? What caused it to be renewed so quickly?
I think it's a couple things that I think HBO has a pretty lucrative deal for, like, overseas in Sky One or something in the UK.
Okay.
I read something about that. I'm a little fuzzy on the details, so I'm not going to get into it and pretend like I know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
But I think there are some financial reasons involved there. And then also the fact that you've got the source material already prepared for you.
Yeah, I guess that saves some time.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a... And the fact that it got really good critical reviews, the fan base of the book seems to really enjoy it. So when you already have that fan base built in, you know they're probably not going to jump ship. You know you've got your source material pretty much pre-written for season two. It's a pretty safe bet.
So you have it on DVR. Sometime in the next week, I'll probably come to your place and watch it with you.
Yeah, we were going to do it after today's recording, but your schedule wound up changing.
It's not going to work today, but...
We'll do an official Sci-Fi Christian review.
Yeah, but I was going to ask you, without spoiling too much, since I haven't seen it yet, you have read the book.
I have.
You've seen the pilot episode.
I have.
First impression.
Really good. Those expecting Lord of the Rings are going to be a little bit shocked. This is a very, very gritty world. That really comes across in Martin's writing. I always kind of describe A Song of Ice and Fire, which is the name of the book series, as kind of the R-rated version of Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
This is definitely not for kids, by the way, either in the TV series or book form. Definitely not for kids.
Okay, good.
Adults only. But so it's very gritty, R-rated fantasy novel, and that really comes across in the way that they did the production design. Everything just has this authentic feel to it. The cast members don't look like Hollywood stars. They look like real people who live in a dirty, grimy world.
Wow.
Really well done.
I mean, I've heard so much from you and Dave, and yep. it sounds awesome. I have to see it.
Yeah, our friend Dave, who's a fan of the show, didn't even like the first book that much, and he's really enjoying the series so far.
So that's going to be pretty good.
Yes, so something to look forward to. But that's not the only George R. R. Martin news this week, Matt.
No, it's not. And let me take this a little bit, Ben.
Okay.
So last week, I was furious with George R. R. Martin.
Yeah, was it last week or 2 weeks ago?
Whatever it was.
It was last week, I think.
When he disparaged the ending of my favorite TV show, Lost.
Yes.
So I already had something against him.
Yes.
But then he went a step further. You could say a step too far, Ben. Because another one of my favorite shows, I'm not necessarily my second favorite, but in my top five of all time, Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say, Ben. I'm angry.
Well, do you want me just to read his quote?
Just read it.
He said, "At the risk of starting another feud, let me say that I was a huge fan of Ron Moore's revival of Battlestar Galactica, but I hated the ending of that series even more than I hated the ending of Lost."
At least Lost got a little bit of love there.
Yeah.
But still, what's his problem?
You know, this was actually a bit of old news to me because I read George R. R. Martin's blog.
Okay.
And is it 2 years since Battlestar ended? Yeah, about 2 years.
Yeah.
He had posted on his blog about how much he hated the ending and thought it was stupid and all of that. So, you know, it wasn't shocking to me, but what's funny is that he's going around on his publicity tour for Game of Thrones and ripping on all of these sci-fi shows.
I know, and other people have already said this, but it really puts a lot of pressure on his show or his books, I guess, to deliver. Yeah, he has to have a great ending, otherwise he's going to be a laughingstock.
Absolutely.
And I'll be at the front of the line of laughers.
See, here's the thing about George R. R. Martin. The guy's a bit of a dick, to not put too fine a point on it. Great writer. Phenomenal writer. I think A Song of Ice and Fire is possibly the best fantasy series since Lord of the Rings.
Really?
However, I mean, you got things like this where he kind of goes around and rips on other shows. When George W. Bush got reelected, he quit writing for a month.
Just to stick it to him?
I guess.
Okay.
He said he was depressed or something like that.
Okay.
Which I don't mind other authors having different opinions than me but about politics or whatnot, but that was kind of stupid and over the top to just quit writing.
Let me ask you this. On our first episode, the pilot of The Sci-Fi Christian, you named your favorite sci-fi properties, and I don't remember Game of Thrones being on your list anywhere.
I don't know if it was or not. I'd have to go back and listen.
I'm almost positive it wasn't. And so for you to say you think it was the best sci-fi series since...
If I didn't have it on the list, here's why I didn't have it on the list.
Okay.
It's been 5 years since the last book, and I'm really annoyed.
Okay.
So it's more a commentary on my feelings about it at the present moment, mm-hmm. with everything taking so long. The fifth book since our pilot episode has been announced that it's coming out in July.
Okay. Oh, that's really close.
That's really close.
Okay.
So something to look
forward
to.
Are you so excited?
Oh, yeah.
I was at Barnes & Noble this past weekend, and right at the front by the cash registers, there's a huge display of all of the books in more of a trade paperback form.
Yeah.
So they're really pushing his books right now.
Yep.
Because of the show.
One of the things that I'm really looking forward to with the fifth book is... For the first three books, all the different characters in the series were in all the books.
Mm-hmm.
In the fourth book, he split the characters because everything was getting too long and the story was getting too big. So book four only had half of the characters, and book five has the other half of the characters at the same time chronologically. But the problem is that book four had all my least favorite characters in it.
Oh, no.
So I've been waiting for about 10 years.
Has it literally been 10 years? No, you said 5 years, right?
5 years since the last book.
10 years since these characters
since book
were...
three.
Oh
yeah.
My god!
So there's my favorite character of all. It has a huge cliffhanger at the end of book three.
Oh my god!
That we've never seen resolved, and that book three is published in 2001.
Wow, that's crazy.
It's crazy.
Oh my god!
So George, let's get cracking here a little bit.
How many more books does he have left?
Two.
Okay, so counting the one in July.
Nope.
So three counting.
It'll be a 7-book series.
Wow. Yeah, I'm going to take my time getting started on this. I typically like to read things before I see a movie or TV show about it, but I guess I'll probably just watch the show this time.
Yeah, I mean, the real question is going to be, if the TV show theoretically runs for 5 years, is he going to have books 6 and 7 ready to go?
Oh my gosh, he's going to have to... Maybe this will actually help you as a reader get your book sooner.
Maybe.
And with a worse ending because he rushed it.
Yeah. then another author can go around and rip on him.
Hey, speaking of books.
Yes.
When I was at the bookstore, I picked up off the shelf two books that you have recommended to me by Neil Gaiman, Neverwhere and American Gods.
Love those books. And guess what, Matt?
What?
HBO, same network behind Game of Thrones, mm-hmm. is developing American Gods into a TV show.
Wow.
Yes, thank you, Game of Thrones, for this.
Really?
Yeah, I mean...
Solely, he's responsible, you think?
Not solely, but you got to look at this and say they're having a successful fantasy property on the air, so it gives them good reason to want to develop another series.
At this point in my life, I am more attracted to single books, like one-shot books, where you don't have to read a series of seven, even though typically I like that type of story. Yeah. Right now, I can't commit to that.
Just the amount of time.
Yeah, so American Gods, that's one book, right?
Nothing. Yes.
Okay, so I'm looking forward to reading this and just having the story in full right there.
Yeah, it's a great book. I would recommend you read Neverwhere first.
Okay.
Just because it's a little bit shorter and you can kind of get the feel for Neil Gaiman's world and style and all that a bit more first.
Are they in the same world?
No.
Okay.
But just his way of writing, I guess, would be the better way to say that.
Okay, that's good advice.
Yeah, and plus I think Neverwhere is a slightly better book.
Plus, isn't Neverwhere a parallel universe?
Kinda.
So that
not what? Just in the way
just
that
let
you're
me,
thinking.
Just let me think. Okay. It is.
It's a parallel universe.
Okay, good.
next on our news, another novel. This is like book week.
Yeah, seriously.
Book week.
That's
good. The Passage by a guy whose name I can't remember. It's a vampire novel that came out. Let me track it down. You talk about it for a second.
I can't talk about it. I've never heard of it before.
I know. That's why this will be amusing.
So, a vampire novel by a guy who wrote a book called The Passage.
Yes.
And basically... Well, let me just hand it over to Ben.
I still don't have his name.
Oh, okay.
Justin Cronin.
Justin Cronin, the guy that wrote The Passage.
Yes.
A vampire novel.
This is being adapted by Matt Reeves, the director of Cloverfield, and also Let Me In, which is another vampire flick that I have not seen yet.
Me either.
But I would like to. The Passage was a really interesting book. It was very, very long. It was like something like 900 pages or something like that. The first 300 pages were literally some of the best stuff I've ever read.
Wow.
It was incredible.
Really?
Like very moving, very powerfully written, thrilling, everything you want out of a novel. The next 600 pages, there's a huge tonal shift, and I won't give away the spoiler, but there's a huge shift in what goes on in the novel, and it completely fell apart.
Was the tonal shift based on storytelling, or did the author just lose himself somewhere?
It was a storytelling thing, so the plot radically changed.
Wow.
After 300 pages.
Okay.
And it basically drove the book off a cliff for me.
Okay.
It was boring. It was everything that the first 300 pages were. This was the opposite.
Wow, that's a bummer.
Yeah, it was one of the most disappointing reads I've ever come across because I loved the first 300 pages so much.
So how do you feel about this news here then?
It could be a case where the film is actually better than the book because it is able to tighten up some of those boring passages and make the characters a little more interesting. I'm definitely interested in seeing where this goes.
But you can't recommend anybody to read the book first?
Not really.
Okay.
You know, the book's going to be part of a trilogy, and unfortunately the next two books are going to continue along the same path of the first 600 pages.
The last 600?
Or the last 600 pages. Apparently the first 300 pages in the book are more of just a setup, even though... That's the best stuff in the book by far.
Did you write him a letter and say?
I did not.
Oh, okay, because you might want to tell him. Maybe he needs to know.
I'll think about it. Hey, Justin, if you're listening to the Sci-Fi Christian right now, what the heck, man?
But, I mean, he's trying to compliment you. The first 300 were some of the best pages he's ever read.
Yeah.
So let's send this audio file out to his – we'll email him.
Okay, that'd be a good idea. We'll track down Justin Cronin's email and let him know that two amateur podcasters in Minnesota, one of whom has not even read the book, would like him to go back and revise The Passage.
Don't revise it. Just make the next two books
please
better.
Revise it.
Oh, okay.
Because there's no way that after what he did that he can go back at this point.
Okay.
He needs to go back and continue the story of the first 300 pages.
Speaking of books...
Yes.
There's a trilogy of books that I think are aimed at young adults, but I know a lot of adults that enjoy them too. And the first book is called The Hunger Games. Are you familiar with these books?
I have heard the title. I am not familiar
with
them.
There's one called like Mockingjay.
Yeah.
I don't know all the books, but...
They're super popular.
Yeah, and some of the kids in my youth group have really liked them. And like I said, I also know adults that like them as well. So I'm thinking I'll read them eventually. And they're putting these into movies as well.
Probably. Do you know anything about them? Beyond that, kids like them and adults like them too.
And they're sci-fi?
And they're sci-fi?
No, I don't know anything
about it. Okay, so there's a research project for all you listeners out there.
But here's the news. Because it's being made into a movie, I read a bit of casting news that surprised me. Elizabeth Banks, who is typically a comedic actress, is going to be in this movie.
Cool.
So maybe it's comedic sci-fi.
Maybe.
Book aimed at young adults. I don't know.
We'll find out.
So if you're out there and you like these books, maybe call in and let us know.
What's that call-in line, Matt?
What's what called?
What's the call-in
line? Oh, the call-in line. 612-4121-SFC.
That was a slow pitch over home plate, man.
Yeah, sorry. So, yeah, call in. Let us know what you think about these books. Are they worth reading for me and Ben?
Yeah.
Do you recommend them? And give us a brief summary without any spoilers.
I probably won't read them.
Okay.
Because I got a lot going on. No. Another book news. This transitioning to comic books.
Oh, yes, good.
Ultimate Spider-Man. This is a spoiler, spoiler, spoiler if you are reading the series.
Oh, yeah.
And you care about this.
I actually already... I was spoiled.
Okay. So Spider-Man in the Ultimate Spider-Man universe has died.
He is dead right now?
I don't know.
I heard he was going to die.
He was going to die or something's going to happen. Anyway, there's going to be a new Spider-Man. Peter Parker will no longer be Spider-Man.
This is shocking to me because I know a little bit about the Ultimate Universe, maybe just a little bit more than an average reader.
Yeah.
I've read a lot of Ultimate Spider-Man, a lot of the Ultimates. Well, some of the Ultimates, and minimal Ultimate X-Men. But Spider-Man, Ultimate Spider-Man, is really the main character in the whole Ultimate Universe. I think it was that line that kicked off the entire Ultimate Universe. So for them to kill this character is shocking to me. Obviously, I haven't followed in recent years, so I don't know exactly what's happening storyline-wise, other than they recently had this thing called Ultimatum, where they kind of... They killed tons and tons of people in the Ultimate Universe, and then repackaged the brand as, I think, just Ultimate Comics. I think they have a whole new... I don't know. Marvel has a new imprint called Ultimate Comics.
Yeah. Here's my opinion of this. The Ultimate Universe was designed for readers to be able to, who didn't want to catch up on 50 years of backstory and chronology, to be able to jump in with these characters as though they were reading them for the first time.
Yeah.
With stuff like this, it shows me that the Ultimate Universe has run its course.
Oh, because why? What do you
mean? It's now getting too complex. It's getting too convoluted. It's going the same way as the main storyline.
Here's some things about the Ultimate Universe. When somebody dies, they typically keep them dead, as opposed to anybody that dies in regular comics comes back to life eventually.
Yeah.
Typically. Another thing about the Ultimate Universe that's cool is, like you said, they set it up so that you don't have to catch up on 50 years.
Yeah.
So they take some elements from the regular Marvel Universe and then totally redo it. So there's huge, huge differences in many of the characters. So.
Yeah, I just think that if your goal is to make these characters accessible for new readers, they're now wandering pretty far from that goal.
Yeah.
And they're doing the same convoluted stuff that makes the main series of comics really complex to try and jump into.
Yeah.
I'd rather that they just give it all a break and reboot it in another 5 years.
That's interesting. Well, anyways. Hey, yeah. Speaking about comic books.
Yes. This is book week.
Speaking of comic books, we have some Superman news, but it's in movie news. Man of Steel.
Do you want to do it?
Yeah. I'm gonna talk a little bit about Man of Steel.
Okay.
Just minimally. It sounds like it's going to be an origin story, which could not be more disappointing to me.
Yeah, but it's going to be kind of interesting. Apparently, Clark Kent is going to be a reporter in West Africa covering some story, and then he's going to learn something about himself and go home to Smallville and see Ma and Pa Kent. Yeah, and
this sounds familiar. I think this is the storyline in maybe Earth One or, I don't know, some Superman comic.
Yeah.
So.
Oh. Maybe.
Are you interested? Does this make you more interested in the movie or less interested?
Right now, my level of interest is minimal simply because even though I haven't seen his last couple movies, Zack Snyder's batting percentage seems to be going downhill really fast.
You never saw Watchmen?
I saw Watchmen. Okay. I didn't see Legends of the Guardians of Ga'Hoole or whatever the stupid owl movie. Yeah, was. And I didn't see Sucker Punch. Both of them got terrible reviews.
I hope he does better this time.
So do I. I just think that Zack Snyder might turn out to be a one-hit wonder.
He might turn out to be an M. Night Shyamalan.
Maybe.
Oh, speaking of M. Night Shyamalan, this is not in my notes to talk about, but did you see what I put up on our Twitter?
No.
There's a fan outcry. And they're actually, there's a campaign to raise money to send M. Night Shyamalan to film school.
I'm going to go donate.
Yeah. And so there's, if you get to this, I think it's like 150,000 or something. If once they reach that goal, they're going to offer the check to M. Night Shyamalan because they think he has good ideas, but that he sucks lately.
Yes.
And so, and if he refuses it, they're going to turn it into a scholarship.
That's
so
awesome.
Yeah. Check out our Twitter, which is just Sci-Fi Christian. You can check out the link. And
if you go to our website, scifichristianpodcast.com, I've got a little widget on the side that will take you to our Twitter.
Yeah, so I thought that news was pretty funny.
Definitely. That is amazing.
Yeah.
One last piece of book news.
Okay.
And then we'll get to our Batman news for the week. The book Pride and Prejudice and Zombies,
yes,
which is somewhere on my shelf, and I find hysterical.
You own it?
I do.
Have you read it?
I've read parts of it.
Is it? How is it?
As a book, it's not that great. Yeah. It's something to pull off and show to people and talk about how funny it is.
Yeah.
It's pretty great. Before I talk about the news here, I'll just explain what the book is.
Okay.
So, obviously, Pride and Prejudice is in the public domain by Jane Austen.
Yep.
It's, you know, the text is not copyrighted. You can do whatever you want with it.
Okay.
So this guy, Seth Graham Greene, took the book and he took Jane Austen's text and wrote zombie scenes into it. So he turned Pride and Prejudice into a zombie novel.
So it is still some of the much of the same text.
Yes. Jane Austen is a co-author on the book.
That's crazy.
So Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, if you look at the book, is co-authored by Jane Austen and Seth Graham Greene.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Isn't that amazing?
That is pretty awesome.
So this has been adapted into the movie. Craig Gillespie,
okay,
who directed a movie called Lars and the Real Girl.
Are you trying to say Gillespie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Shut up. And is directing the remake of Fright Night.
Oh, with Colin Farrell.
Yes.
Okay.
And so he is going to be the director. I know nothing about him. I've seen none of his stuff.
Me either.
But the movie is going to be hysterical.
I've seen that that book on the shelves, and I never really knew what it was about. So thank you for sharing that.
Well, it's now part of... This is Seth Graham Greene's actually the guy who wrote Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
I thought so. I was thinking that.
And then there's like been a whole line of these mashups now. So somebody else, not him, but somebody else in the same line, wrote Sense and Sensibility and Sea Monsters.
Yeah, I've seen that too.
So there's all these amazing books that, even though they're probably not that great to sit down and read, are hysterical ones that you must have on your shelf.
It's a great idea.
Absolutely.
That's really good.
All right. Should we get to our Dark Knight news?
I think we should.
Or Batman news more this week.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
Ben, where should we start?
We should start with the news that Batman is coming to a stage near you.
A stage?
Batman Live.
Okay, I saw this article. I just read the headline. I did not actually click on it. I thought it looked too strange, but go ahead and talk about it.
Oh, it looks really bizarre.
Okay.
It's a UK production that I believe is doing a musical version of Batman, complete with the Joker, Harley Quinn, Penguin, Riddler, Robin, all your favorite characters.
Okay.
It is touring in the UK this year. It will be in North America next year. Matt?
We're going.
We're going.
We're definitely going.
We will find a way. Even if it doesn't come to Minneapolis, we will see Batman Live.
All right. I will definitely do it, but I'm a little worried about this.
It's going to be terrible.
Based on Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. Or what is it?
Yeah.
Called?
Which is now on hold, by the way.
Yeah, because everybody on the cast got hurt, basically. Like, there was nonstop injuries.
I think Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark was trying to be something great and profound. I think Batman Live is trying to just be stupid.
And campy?
Yep. That's... I think it's in the Adam West mold.
Okay,
so
that will be better.
Yeah.
This is good news. Okay, we're going.
Yes. So definitely we're going to find a way to see this. Colin, by the way,
you
could see it before us. So if you want to do a sci-fi Christian review for us, since you are in the UK.
A UK correspondent?
Uh-huh.
Nice.
I think, Colin, this needs to happen.
Or better yet, set up your tent, invite us out to the UK, we'll all go together.
Matt, we're just starting to reestablish trust with Colin, not creep him out.
Okay.
We need to get the restraining order lifted against us first.
Hey, let's move on. But before we go to Dark Knight Rises,
yes,
let me talk about Dark
the
Knight,
other DKR.
Dark Knight Returns.
Dark Knight Returns.
Which is Frank Miller's hugely successful, popular graphic novel that came out
a long time ago.
I think in the 80s, right?
I have an autographed copy downstairs.
What? How did you get that?
Comic-Con.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice. So
that's the only graphic novel of mine you're not allowed to borrow.
I will not. So this is a gritty graphic novel, isn't it?
It is. It takes place 5 years after Batman has retired.
Mm-hmm.
So Batman's an old guy.
It's an Elseworld. Is that what they call them? Like
I don't know if it's officially an Elseworld or not, but it's definitely outside the normal chronology.
Okay.
So Batman's an old guy, and he is brought back out of retirement.
Sounds good.
It's amazing.
So the reason we're even bringing this up is Warner Brothers is looking at possibly making an animated movie of this graphic novel.
They're also doing an animated one of Year One, which is Frank Miller's other Batman graphic novel.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so we could have a couple of really, really cool animated Batman movies.
They'll definitely have these come out at the same time as the movie.
For sure.
So 2012 is a huge Batman year.
For sure. 2012 is just going to be an amazing geek year.
Oh, man. Avengers.
Avengers.
Okay. Anyways.
I can't wait.
You have some casting news?
Yeah, we had a little bit of casting news for Dark Knight Rises now. Actually, we've already announced these two people were going to be in the cast, but we didn't know who they were playing. Mm-hmm. Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Marion Cotillard.
The girl from Inception.
The girl, French girl from Inception. Yeah. We don't know how to say her last name. But anyway, we had speculated, who are they going to play? Is Marion C., I'll just call her, going to play Talia al Ghul? Is Joseph Gordon-Levitt going to play
Robin
or Alberto Falcone? Yeah, yeah. No and no.
No and no. And I don't know if you saw, but I posted this on our Facebook page with how I was distraught over this casting news.
Were you distraught that he wasn't playing Robin?
No, I didn't care about that. I really wanted Talia al Ghul to be in this movie.
You might still get your wish.
I know.
No, let me explain the theory that's out there. When Liam Neeson, who played Ra's al Ghul in Batman Begins, was cast. He was cast as Henry Ducard, not as Ra's al Ghul. She could be Talia al Ghul in disguise.
Oh, undercover.
So the rumor that she is playing Talia al Ghul is far, far from dead.
I hope that it's her. I really hope it's
that
her.
That would be awesome.
But the character she supposedly is playing is a Wayne Incorporated board member or something.
Yeah. I think that's true. I'm not saying that this is misdirection. What I'm saying is that I think the Wayne Enterprises board member she's playing could actually be Talia al Ghul in disguise.
Good. And then Joseph Gordon-Levitt is playing a cop character, a beat cop.
Yeah, which could be kind of neat.
Yeah, that's fine.
So in Nolan We Trust, unexpected that they're basically playing two new characters seemingly. But hey, if this is what he wants to do, he can do it.
In other casting news, I was so happy about this. Lost actor, whose real name is Nestor Carbonello, who we know as Richard from Lost.
I'm not sure that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah, he was Richard in Lost. He is reprising his role as the mayor of Gotham.
Yeah.
So that's great, great news for me.
Did you know that I saw Dark Knight before I watched Lost? So I didn't even realize he was a Lost actor.
I did not know that. I knew it immediately.
Yes, I'm sure you did. But he was great as the mayor.
Yeah, he was good.
Yeah, so super excited about that. Great news. All right, Matt, we've had a ton of news. It's time to get to our main topic.
Let's do it.
All righty. And our main topic, transition music,
is perfect.
Is perfect for this week. Ben. Every time I hear that music, I just get excited.
Really? That's awkward. okay. Ben, we have a call in from Scott Herzog from the Sci-Fi Diner podcast. And I think it's a good introduction to our talk.
Let's play it.
Hey, this is Scott Herzog from the Sci-Fi Diner podcast calling in about Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog. When this came out, I remember when this came out. This came out during the writer's strike a few years ago. There wasn't much on as far as new content, and this kind of Whedon's harebrained scheme to kind of do something in the middle of that. And what a phenomenal cast. I mean, come on. Neil Patrick Harris. You have Nathan Fillion, and then, of course, you have the beautiful, enigmatic Felicia Day as a cast in this core cast. And what a great idea to do a sci-fi comedic musical. You know, there's a lot of people out in the sci-fi world that say that sci-fi comedy does not fly. But I'm going to tell you that this is proof. This is proof that you can have sci-fi comedy, and you can make it work, and you can even do it in a musical form. And really, what a original idea. There hasn't been a lot of sci-fi musicals out there, and you get this, and it works, and it is funny. And love it. And this, of course, is a throw, this is a throw-in to anyone that had watched Buffy, anyone that was familiar with the Guild at the time, anyone that was familiar with, Firefly. You know, you had some central characters from these shows, and it was just awesome. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. I don't know what else to say about it. I'm a huge fan of Dr. Horrible, and I think it's a very important moment in sci-fi history only because of the fact that you have a sci-fi musical at work. Web series, now downloadable as a DVD from Netflix, or instant streaming, and it's just phenomenal. And they're working on a Dr. Horrible, too. That's awesome. So we'll catch you later. Thanks, guys. Bye.
That was a good synopsis.
Definitely. I think he hit on a lot of points that we'll expand on a little bit.
Yeah.
Should we start with the history of this series?
The history. Let's go back all the way to 2008.
Yes.
The year of the dreaded writer's strike.
Actually, we need to go back farther than that.
How far back do you want to go, Ben?
We need to go back to 2001.
2001?
2001. The origins of Dr. Horrible actually begin in Buffy Season 6.
Really?
Buffy had, over the years as it progressed and kind of evolved, had a few different experimental episodes along the way. In Season 4, there was an episode called Hush, where a demon shows up at Sunnytale and basically casts a curse over the whole town, which takes away everyone's ability to speak.
Okay.
So there's a few scenes at the beginning of dialogue, there's a few scenes at the end, but beyond that, the entire episode is without dialogue.
Yeah, you told me about this before. So a silent episode. That's a
silent episode.
You think it was really good, though, right?
It was brilliant. Okay. It's one of the most well-known, critically acclaimed episodes in the entire series.
Wow.
In Season 5, I will not give away any spoilers here, but there's a point where a character dies. And to try and demonstrate the grief process and pull the audience into the grief process, mm-hmm. Joss Whedon does an entire episode with no music in it,
okay.
which is very unusual.
Yeah.
And it's very jarring to watch that episode, and it has a very different feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it really pulls you into it. And then the most famous experimental episode, though, comes in Season 6 with the episode Once More with Feeling.
I've heard about this episode.
It is brilliant. The premise of the episode is, again, they don't cheat with it. A demon shows up at Sunnydale, casts a spell over the whole town.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike Hush, though, where nobody's allowed to speak, in this case, everybody begins to break out in song.
So everything they try to speak comes out as a song.
Exactly. They are, and not only a song, but very, very honest lyrics. So
They
can't help but tell the truth.
Okay.
So you have all of these characters who begin expressing themselves in Broadway musical terms.
Yeah.
It's absolutely phenomenal. And it's not only the main characters, but it's also more minor characters in the series.
Townspeople.
For example, let me play you one bit of this. This is the parking ticket, where we see a random woman getting a parking ticket from a cop and attempting to argue her way out of it.
Okay.
Put that pad away. I'm asking you, please, no. It isn't right, it isn't fair. There was no parking anywhere. I think that hydrant wasn't there. Why can't you let it go? I think I've paid more than my share. I'm just a poor girl, don't you care? Hey, I'm not wearing underwear.
Excuse me.
Just everything you do to try and argue your way out of a parking ticket. Haven't you ever tried that last line?
I have not tried that.
Oh, okay. That's probably for the best. But a super funny episode.
Okay.
Also really, really powerful in terms of what it does about the characters. Because since they're not able to, they have to be perfectly honest as they're mm-hmm. singing their songs. All these secrets that have been held back begin to be revealed. You have stuff that's been, you know, kind of repressed for several seasons that comes out in this episode.
Wow, that sounds good.
Very, very powerful thematically. Possibly the best episode in the show.
Wow, that's crazy. And I'm obviously very behind. I've only seen 3 episodes of Buffy, so
yeah.
Someday I'll see that.
So Joss Whedon wrote all the music for it.
Mm-hmm.
He directed it. He wrote the episode. He wrote all the lyrics and everything. So he had a huge part in doing this. Obviously, you can see how this is kind of ties into Dr. Horrible mm-hmm. because Joss Whedon has proved to himself that he can do a musical now and do it well and have it be critically acclaimed and have everybody love it.
And he had actually also wrote the song for Firefly, the theme song, didn't he?
He did, which Dave Johnson is a big fan of ripping on,
yep.
even though he's wrong.
So he is obviously...
What is your opinion of the Firefly theme, Matt?
Well, I don't really like it.
Are you serious?
I've been holding it back because I know you have strong feelings about this. You know, Dave seems to hate it. I don't think I hate it. I don't think it's the greatest song. But
it's a perfect summary of Mal's character.
It definitely sets the mood.
I mean, all the lyrics, if you listen to it, it's Mal Reynolds. It's perfect for his character.
Yeah, I mean, it's okay. It's not the best song.
Oh, my gosh.
It's okay.
Oh, I'm going to have to... We're going to have to bring Dave
on. It's no Lost theme.
The Lost theme's like 10 seconds long. Yeah.
That's pretty good.
No.
Okay.
Sometime I do want to do an episode of our top 5 sci-fi fantasy themes.
So just in a soundtrack or as a theme song?
Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
So we'll bring Dave on for that one
we
do. And he and I can battle it out, and you can be the judge. We'll each try and pull you to convince you about the Firefly theme song.
Okay.
And you'll probably wind up neutral just like you are right now, but it'll be fun.
So What other history do you have here leading up to this writer's strike?
So we have Once More with Feeling, which is a major part of the origin of Dr. Horrible. The other thing that is a major origin of Dr. Horrible is Felicia Day's web series, The Guild.
Yes, The Guild.
Have you watched The Guild yet, Matt?
Yeah, I've seen the first two seasons and part of season three.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
Well, brilliant's a strong word.
It's hysterical.
It's entertaining.
Yeah, highly entertaining.
I wouldn't say highly entertaining. I like some of it.
Really?
It's okay.
Oh, I laughed through the whole thing.
Yeah, it's okay.
I think it's one of the funniest things I've seen.
I like it all right. I like the characters okay. Some of them are... I don't think I feel as strongly as you do.
Oh, okay.
No, it's not my favorite show. But
maybe it's because you're less of a gamer than me.
It could be. I'm watching it, though, so that... You know, because you've highly recommended it. It's not a huge time commitment. Each season is like 40 minutes long.
Right.
It's like watching Dr. Horrible.
Yeah. But in any case... The Guild is certainly a big influence on Dr. Horrible because Joss Whedon was a big fan of it.
Can you talk a little bit, what is this Guild, the web series? How did this work back when it was first coming out?
Well, basically, the premise of the show is that it's about a bunch of nerds playing World of Warcraft. They don't call it World of Warcraft, but it's you know, supposed to be World of Warcraft, more or less.
Yeah.
And they are completely socially inept, and they wind up meeting each other for the first time in real life, and things spiral out of control. It's very funny.
Yeah, but what I mean is... It as a web series. So this show, we talk about a season being only 40 minutes. Well, each episode was 5 minutes long.
And
they released them online only for a period of time. And then eventually they packaged them all together and put them out there. So this is very forerunner-ish of Dr. Horrible, how that ended up coming out.
Yeah, and Felicia Day kind of did all of it by herself for the first season. Then Microsoft has financed her for the other season five's coming out this year. So for the other four seasons.
Wow.
So... She kind of had some help along the way after that, but really this was kind of her thing, getting this up off the ground, showing that you could have a viable web series of content that was good, well written, well acted, well directed, all distributed online, and people would enjoy it, and you could make money off of it this way.
Yeah, and it is enjoyable.
Absolutely.
For what it is.
We're just going to have to disagree on this one, and I will beat you down and show you that I'm right later.
Okay.
For fun. Yeah. So anyway, the important part, though, for us is not whether or not The Guild is amazing, though it is. It is the fact that Joss Whedon agrees with me.
Okay, good. That's true.
And you should be glad that he did.
I am glad.
Because Joss Whedon loved The Guild and decided during the writer's strike that he wanted to do something similar. He wanted to finance his own web series, and with the influence of Once More Feeling in there, he decided he wanted to finance his own musical web series, and so it was that...
Dr. Horrible came to be.
Exactly.
So, Ben, just for some of our younger listeners who might not remember the dreaded writer's strike between 2007 and 2008.
It was horrible.
Man, so here's what happened. There was arguments, and they couldn't... So they were on, the writers were on strike because they wanted more money when it comes to internet content and DVD. Is this correct, how you remember it?
Yeah, a lot of it was over web content.
Yeah, and the contracts that were in place were from a time before some of the technology we have now existed. And so all of our shows, including Lost, got cut down to, I think, only 13 episodes that season. And, oh, man, it was horrible. I was so stressed about Lost.
Battlestar was actually one of the big catalysts to all of this because Battlestar had done, I believe at the time, two webisode series, one called The Occupation, set between seasons 2 and 3. Mm-hmm. And the writers didn't get paid for it.
Okay.
They basically had to write the content, but because of their contracts, they didn't get paid anything additional.
Oh, okay.
So they were being asked to do additional work without being given any additional compensation.
Yeah, you know, that's crazy. And like I'm starting to remember things now. So they were literally like against the law for these writers to work on things for any studios.
Yes.
Like they were obligated to not do anything. So even like Jay Leno's Tonight Show or Dave Letterman's Late Show, they could not write their own material, right? Isn't that right? How did that work?
Something like that.
It was weird. I remember for a while the shows were canceled and then they came back, but they couldn't tell any jokes or something because they weren't allowed to write anything.
Yeah.
So this was a very crazy time in television.
And there was a lot of question about whether or not certain shows were even going to come back. Battlestar, I believe, was just about to enter its final season or was partway into its final season.
I think it ended when they finally got to... Well, I don't want to spoil it, but I think it ended very drearily.
That's a word. So they were halfway through season 4, if you know Yeah, if you've seen the show, you'll know what we're talking about.
That would have been the worst ending ever.
But that was almost the ending to the show, because they, for a while, it looked like Battlestar wasn't going to come back for its final 10 episodes.
Yeah, so this was a bad time.
Definitely.
But luckily, there was a silver lining in this dark cloud.
You know, some shows never recovered, though, just to kind of put a final
thought on it. Heroes never recovered.
I would argue The Office never recovered.
Oh, really?
I think if you look at The Office, season 4 is where things started to really change in terms of their tone. There were some storylines that got abandoned. I think the show really started to go downhill starting in season 4.
Heroes, which is one of my favorite shows at the time, there was high hopes for where season 2 was going, and then the strike killed a storyline that was going to impact the rest of the season.
Yes.
And it never actually came back to finish off the episodes for that season, so it just ended strangely. When it came back, it was different and horrible.
And I know from our discussion of Lost that you have used the writer's strike as a defense for why some certain mysteries did not get answered.
I have?
Yes.
Oh yes. Well, I know for sure that, let me think back to what was happening around the time. They had planned to do more with the freighter characters.
Mm-hmm.
We never learned some of the backstory for Charlotte, Daniel, Miles, and Frank that we were supposed to.
Yeah. Wasn't there something in season 3, though, like with the women unable to give birth, how that was going to be addressed more?
I don't know about that, but that's possible.
I think you've told me that maybe you were just making it up to defend Lost.
Possibly. I do that kind of thing often.
I'm sure you do. Very nice.
But as we're now approaching our discussion on Dr. Harbaugh, just for your last warning, we are going to tell everything that happens in this movie, because we need to have an open discussion about what happens, how it was amazing.
Yeah. And we might try and give some minor spoiler warnings before we get to some of the really big stuff that happens at the very end of the show.
Yeah.
But from this point on, consider yourself in danger of spoilers.
Yeah. So if you haven't seen it, go watch it. It's only 40 minutes, and then come back and listen to the rest of this.
Yeah, this is your warning.
It's streaming on Netflix. That's how I watched it this week. You can buy it at Best Buy.
For like $10.
Yeah.
It's worth it.
Yeah. Amazon, really cheap. So,
yep.
Okay.
So do that, come back, listen. Otherwise, you're going to get spoiled.
Let's do it, Ben. Let's spoil the heck out of this thing.
All right. So should we start by describing just some of the characters?
Sure.
There's basically three main characters.
Yep.
And there we have the title character, Dr. Horrible, a.k.a. Billy.
Billy.
And tell me about him, Matt.
Well, Billy, kind of a geeky, non-confident person. He has somewhat of a twitch in his eyes. So, you know, kind of always, he wants to be more. He knows that he can be more. And he thinks his way of achieving success is by being successfully evil.
Yes, he actually wants to do good in the world.
He wants social change.
And he thinks that the way to do that is to take over the world and rule it as a supervillain.
Oh, my notes are over here. You keep talking while I go grab something, because I have a really good quote from Billy.
Okay. Billy, by the way, is played by the one and only Neil Patrick Harris, who does a great job in the role. He's a very complex character, too. He, like we were saying, he wants social change. He wants things to be different in the world. But he sees that the way to do that is to conquer evil, or to conquer the world and be evil. Billy's goal is to join the Evil League of Evil, which is run by the one and only Bad Horse, who we discover at the end of the series is quite literally an actual horse. Matt, what do you think of Bad Horse?
I think Bad Horse, I'm interested to learn more about Bad Horse and find out how he became the leader of the Evil League of Evil. Here's the quote from Billy.
You know, in the Dr. Horrible graphic novel, we do find out a bit more about Bad Horse.
Really?
Yes.
That's interesting.
And the Evil League of Evil.
Yeah, listen to this quote about Billy wanting to make change. He says, "The status is not quo."
Yes.
I love that quote.
It's so great.
Yeah.
It's right at the beginning. He says something about wanting to change the status quo because the status is not quo. And it's typical Joss Whedon dialogue.
Yeah, it's really good.
So that's great. And Billy is highly attracted to our second character, Penny.
Yes, played by Felicia Day of The Guild.
Yes. Penny and Billy go to the laundromat together.
Well, they don't actually go together. He
kind of stalks her.
And that leads to him developing a long-distance crush on her. She has no idea who he is.
Yes, so he goes there every time that she is in the laundromat. They have never spoken at the beginning of the series.
Mm-hmm.
He tells his friend Moist in one of the first scenes that he is only a few weeks away from a real verbal connection with her, which is another just great line.
Yeah.
Penny has similar desires to Dr. Horrible. She wants to see social change, but her way of going about that is very different from his.
It is. She really cares about the homeless, as it turns out. Yes. So she does things like tries to set up or get petitions signed to save shelters. And, you know, Billy points out to her that you're just curing the symptom, I think he says.
Yes. The fish rots from the head, as they say. So I say, why not just cut off the head?
And then she's like, do you want to cut off the head of the world?
The human race.
Or the human race, yeah.
He goes, it's not a perfect metaphor.
That's very good.
It's great.
Yeah.
And Penny winds up, during the course of the series, being introduced to the third character, played by Nathan Fillion.
Yes. Captain Hammer.
Captain Hammer, who is the hero in our universe.
Well, in quotes.
In quotes, yes.
He is a superhero who could not be more self-centered.
Exactly. Captain Hammer is the opposite of Dr. Horrible. Mm-hmm. He does good for very selfish motives. He protects people for his own glory and for his own benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Because he wants to be loved and adored by his fans, but he also wants to keep people in their place.
He does.
For example, when he's speaking to the homeless people in the great song, Everyone's a Hero in Their Own Way. Should we just play a little bit of this?
Well,
I think we should. Okay. We need to play some of the
just
songs.
Just a tiny bit, because this is not the best song. We have to talk about what we think our favorite song
is. We'll get to that, but we need to play several of the songs. So okay. This is an example of how Captain Hammer oppresses people, and it's generally not as good a guy as he seems.
Mm-hmm.
It may not feel too classy, begging just to eat. But you know who does that? Lassie. And she always gets a treat.
Love that.
So you wonder what your part is, because you're homeless and depressed. But home is where the heart is, so your real home's in your chest. Everyone's a hero in their own way. Everyone's got villains they must face. They're not as cool as mine, but folks, you know it's fine to know your place.
Yeah. So,
knowing your place.
Knowing your place. Yeah,
I think Dr. Horrible says it best when he calls Captain Hammer a corporate tool.
Yes. Captain Hammer's also an idiot.
Yes.
The whole, your real home's in your chest is pretty indicative of his actual level of intelligence. So great character, but certainly not quite the hero that we would expect from the heroic character
exactly.
in the story.
Exactly. Which makes Dr. Horrible look even, I mean, we can really relate to him, even though he's obviously trying to join the Evil League of Evil.
Yes, the Evil League of Evil. And we have to play Bad Horse's song quick so that people understand.
Which one? The first one? Or
the first one is great.
Bad Horse, Bad Horse, Bad Horse. He rides across the nation, the thoroughbred of sin. He got the application that you just sent in. It needs evaluation, so let the games begin. A heinous crime, a show of force, a murder would be nice, of course. Bad horse, bad horse, bad horse, he's bad. The Evil League of Evil is watching, so beware. The grade that you receive will be your last, we swear. So make the bad horse gleeful, or he'll make you his mare. You're saddled up, there's no recourse. It's hire or silver, side bad horse.
What does make him... make him your mare mean? I don't...
A mare is a female horse. Are you serious?
No, no.
Okay.
Ben, let me ask you this. Can you name the members of the Evil League of Evil?
Ooh, I know two of them.
Okay, go.
Beyond Bad Horse. Fake Thomas Jefferson.
Fake Thomas Jefferson, yes.
David Bowie.
Dead Bowie.
Dead Bowie.
Yep.
And I don't know the other two.
I have them here. There's one named Tie-Dye.
Yes.
Snakebite. This is my favorite. Professor Normal. Actually, I like Fake Thomas Jefferson.
And then, Fake Thomas Jefferson is pretty cool.
Then there's Fury Lika, which is probably the girl. I don't know who that is.
Yeah.
And Bad Horse.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I thought that was interesting.
Yes. So Bad Horse, I forgot how we got on the topic of him.
I think we were just talking about the characters. And So right now what's happening is Dr. Horrible's motivation is he wants to join the Evil League of Evil. Bad Horse is the leader of the Evil League. And so... he is Bad Horse, as you heard in the song, has now given his instructions on what Dr. Horrible needs to do to have his application accepted.
He needs to kill someone. And so Dr. Horrible naturally decides that he is going to kill Captain Hammer.
Well, that's actually what happens in the second Bad Horse letter. He demands an assassination.
Oh, that's right.
But yeah, eventually that's where we go. And
yes.
Dr. Horrible is actually, he is not really into killing people, as it turns out.
No, but here's kind of where things wind up, just so that we can kind of, because we're bouncing around a little bit. We have Dr. Horrible has a crush on Penny. Mm-hmm. Penny winds up going out with Captain Hammer. And so Dr. Horrible decides that he will kill Captain Hammer to get into the Evil League of Evil.
Well, actually, something happened. I mean, that is true. But what actually happens is Hammer says that he's going to be with Penny. And this is a quote, just because you want her. He realizes yes. that Billy, which is Dr. Horrible's alias, has a crush on Penny. And so Hammer doesn't even necessarily have that strong feelings for Penny. He just wants to be with her to mess with Dr. Horrible.
To take from him, to steal from him, right. to beat him down.
Can we talk a little bit about Billy and Penny's relationship?
We should.
Okay. Do you want to kick things off? Or do you want me to start something?
You go for it.
Well, this is... So, we're looking at these two characters, and obviously they're different, but they have similar motivations. And how I was seeing it when I was watching this last Friday, is it seems to me they're two sides of the same coin. They both want a similar result, but they're coming at it from different directions.
Yes.
And after I thought that and wrote it down in my notes here, I realized, do you know where they meet all the time? At the laundromat, which is called the coin wash.
Oh.
I think they are truly two sides of the same coin.
They definitely are. That's an interesting reading of the material.
Yeah. Yeah, and then it's funny because Billy even says to Penny, sometimes, I think this is... Is this Penny or Billy that said this? I should have wrote who said this quote. Sometimes people are layered like that. There's something deeper than the surface.
Yes. And, but she's speaking about Captain Hammer.
Yeah, I know. But, yeah. But that's what's interesting. So Penny's saying that about Captain Hammer, but she's saying it to Billy, and we know that Billy is actually the one that has something deeper beneath the surface.
You've got some deep analysis going on here.
I'm talking. This is my interpretation. This yes. is my dissection.
So the difference between Penny and Dr. Horrible is that Penny is an optimist about the state of things. She believes that the world can change for the better. Dr. Horrible believes that society must be torn down first and then rebuilt mm-hmm. from the ground up.
Yes.
And this difference between them comes across in what, in my opinion, is the best song in the show.
This is your favorite song.
My Eyes. And I want to play part of it because this really sums up the relationship between Dr. Horrible and Penny.
And actually, perfectly. Before you play it, if you're watching the video, when you're watching the video, these two characters are, it's a split screen. So you see both of them singing their parts side by side, coin by coin.
Yes, I think you're onto something here, Matt.
Any dolt with half a brain can see that humankind has gone insane. To the point where I don't know if I'll upset the status quo if I throw poison in the water main. Listen close to everybody's heart and hear that breaking sound. Hopes and dreams are shattering apart and crashing to the ground. I cannot believe my eyes, how the world's filled with filth and lies. But it's plain to see evil inside of me is on the rise.
Look around, we're living with the lost and found. Just when you feel you've almost drowned, you find yourself on solid ground and you believe there's good in everybody's heart. Keep it safe and sound. With hope you can do your part to turn a life around. I cannot believe my eyes. Is the world finally growing wise? 'Cause it seems to me things that I'm afraid.
The dark is everywhere and Penny doesn't seem to care. That soon the dark in me is all that will remain.
And I believe
listen close to in everybody's heart and hear that breaking sound. Hopes and dreams are shattering apart and crashing to the ground. I
I cannot believe my eyes. How the world's finally growing wise.
But it's plain to see.
And it's plain to see.
Evil inside of me.
Inside of me.
Is on the rise.
Well, then.
I gotta say, Matt, that song, to me, is what takes Dr. Horrible from being just a clever piece of entertainment, and it's something that's truly great, that has something legitimate to say,
yeah.
And why we are discussing it on the side.
Why do you think that?
Well, I mean, it's funny, and it's witty, and it's well-designed for the whole thing. Mm. What this does is it really shows us two different ways of looking at the human condition. Do we look at humanity with hope, or do we look at it as something that is irredeemable? Is there something redeemable in the world around us?
Mm.
Very, very powerful theme.
Yeah.
And we will get to that more when we get to our analysis of this.
So, continue on with Penny and Billy's relationship. Do you think... So, obviously, we know that Penny eventually dates Hammer.
Yes.
But what do you think her feelings are for Billy?
I don't know. I think that she wants to save him. I think that every time... they have a conversation, he is more and more pulled toward the good side, and mm-hmm. he begins to change in positive ways, and then that is eventually torn down by Captain Hammer mm-hmm. and the way that he, like you were mentioning earlier, he begins to date Penny and says, I'm dating her so that I can have what you want.
Yeah. So you think that she knows Billy needs saving?
Unconsciously.
Okay.
I think that, I don't know that her character does, but in terms of thematically, mm-hmm. that's certainly the dynamics that's set up. For example, they're having a conversation. He says, I want to be I want to be somebody who really achieves something in life, like bad horse.
Yeah.
And she reacts and says, the thoroughbred of sin?
He goes, yeah.
I meant Gandhi. It's funny, but it's also a really profound line because it shows that, she's showing him a different way to look at achievement and a different way to analyze what is valuable and what he should aim for in life. And so she's pulling him in the good direction and seeking to redeem him from his evil path.
Yeah. I think that she has some feelings for him. Even though she's dating Captain Hammer, and obviously this is probably like a dream. Imagine, you know, female listeners out there, imagine Superman wants to date you. This is what it's probably comparable to, only... Hammer is way worse than Superman.
Not by much.
But listen, there was a scene where she actually was waiting for him at the coin wash with frozen yogurt. And, I mean, obviously she knew that he had those feelings, or he liked yogurt. And I think she kind of sensed that he had some feelings. They almost kissed once, didn't they?
Just about, yes.
What happened there? He stopped it? Is that what?
He finds out that Captain Hammer is going to be coming by the laundromat.
That's right. That's right. Okay.
And so he freaks out and tries to leave.
In the song that you just played, is it "Cannot Believe My Eyes"? What's it called?
My Eyes.
Okay. There's a line where he says he knows that soon only dark will remain inside of him.
Yes.
So that's
very powerful.
Very powerful and very foretelling.
Yes, I think the entire theme. To me, and I'm holding back a little bit because I want to give you my full interpretation in a few minutes, but the major theme of the show is redemption possible?
Mm-hmm.
But this whole relationship between Penny and Dr. Horrible comes to naught in the final act.
It comes to naught in the final act, you're right.
When tragedy strikes.
So, yeah. And
this is the spoiler.
Yeah. This is where, when I'm watching this for the first time with you, you'd already seen it, I think, once.
Yes.
I was shocked. And you see Joss Whedon, Dr. Horrible, sing-along blog, even the actors, you're thinking comedy. Or yeah. This is light.
And it is.
Light
it's
fun.
Very
and,
funny.
It is funny. And then we'd once called this Shakespearean on the show, and here's why. It turns into a tragedy and a story of how a person saw hope in the world through this character, Penny. Dr. Horrible saw hope in Penny, and then...
Hope is snuffed out.
Hope is literally... lost.
What happens is Dr. Horrible has constructed a death ray to try and assassinate Captain Hammer.
Mm-hmm. And I want to talk more about that later.
Yes. His death ray is broken. Captain Hammer picks it up, points it at Dr. Horrible, attempting to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
He pulls the trigger and the death ray explodes. Shards shoot everywhere and kill Penny.
Penny is stabbed. And do you know what her last words are? I have them right here.
Captain Hammer will save us.
Yeah, it's okay. Captain Hammer will save us. Captain Hammer saved us. Yeah.
Yes.
That's tragic in itself.
Yep.
So Billy is holding Penny. Well, it's Dr. Horrible at that point. And he's checking to make sure she's okay. And her last words are that she trusts in this man that's his arch nemesis, this horrible person.
Yes. So Captain Hammer's power is more or less broken. by the death ray exploding on him. Mm-hmm. Whether it's literally broken or whether he's just experiences pain for the first time and he isn't able to cope with it, we're not quite sure. Mm-hmm. Dr. Horrible is granted access into the Evil League of Evil.
For committing an assassination, because he gets the credit for killing Penny.
Yes. He, in the final scenes, we see him rise to prominence as one of the premier supervillains. Mm-hmm. And he appears to have everything that he's ever wanted until the final scene, where we see him numb and broken in front of the camera, unable to comprehend, and we see the real him in that moment.
I know.
Yeah, and it ends.
I'm literally getting chills thinking about the ending right now.
It's a great ending.
So, yeah, and when we see him rise to prominence and join the Evil League of Evil, he gets a brand new suit. Previously, he had been wearing the white suit of innocence, really.
Yes.
And then,
but we should also mention Captain Hammer is dressed in black
throughout
the whole thing.
And in the final scene, Dr. Horrible gets his new outfit with, it's completely red with the dark black gloves.
Yes.
He goes in, joins, and then, like you said, the last shot, Billy's last line is, "I won't feel a thing." And then it just ends.
But we see him say the last word of that, where he's obviously in a great deal of pain. Mm-hmm. So we see that there is still something more genuine there.
Yeah.
It ends with a question of which direction is he really going in?
Yeah. And just to go all the way to the credits, if you think you're watching a comedy, the credits reveal you've just watched a tragedy, because the music is very somber at the beginning of the end credits. It picks up a little bit, but initially they're not leaving you with happy-go-lucky Dr. Horrible music. It is. Yeah, this is it right here.
Just play a bit of a sample of it.
Yeah, so I think we have a lot more to talk about. I have some things I'd like to go with. Do you want to take a start?
Do you want me to give you my reading of one? This is not the way I believe Joss Whedon intends it to be read, but I want to give you one reading of how you could take the ending and everything that goes on here.
Yeah.
I believe you could, especially given that it is Easter week.
Okay.
Read this as a very Christian metaphor.
I love it. Let's hear it.
An analogy for the crucifixion, for the battle over humanity. In my reading, Dr. Horrible would represent humanity. He is the one who is being battled over. Captain Hammer is the force of evil who seeks to oppress him, mm-hmm. tear him down, corrupt him, and pull him towards the darkness.
Okay.
Penny is the force of good who wants to show him a better way, sees redemption, sees something worth redeeming inside of him, wants to pull him towards the light. So, Captain Hammer seeks to kill Dr. Horrible in one of the final scenes, where he points the death ray at him. He tells him, say hello to St. Peter or whoever has his job in hell. He seeks to literally send humanity.
Captain Hammer said that?
Yes.
I don't remember that line.
It's a pretty good line.
Yeah.
He seeks to send humanity, represented by Dr. Horrible in my reading, literally to hell. Penny is the one who dies in his place.
Mm-hmm.
She is sacrificed so that he can continue to live.
The propitiation?
Yes. In her sacrifice, Captain Hammer loses his power. His power is broken. His ability to work evil is broken, just as the devil's power was broken on the cross.
My gosh, this is good stuff.
So Penny dies in the place of Dr. Horrible. By her death, Captain Hammer's power is broken. His ability to pull a Dr. Horrible to the darkness is broken. But the film ends on Saturday after the crucifixion,
mm-hmm.
before the resurrection.
Wait, oh, interesting.
Hope is a question mark. The resurrection is not guaranteed in the film. And here's why I think this can be a legitimate reading of the text, even though I'm not saying that that Joss Whedon was trying to do a metaphor of the crucifixion. Joss Whedon is an atheist.
Mm-hmm.
One of the interesting things he said, as I've watched a bunch of interviews with him, and he said about his faith or lack thereof, he said something to the effect of, "I would really like to have faith, but I just don't."
Hmm.
I think that's very much reflected in how this ends, where I really want there to be hope, and we get that hint with the final question, the final scene of Billy sitting in front of his video blog, numb, emotional, but I'm not sure that it really exists.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you could read this as the Christian story, the story of redemption, the fight to redeem humanity, told through the eyes of somebody who really wants to believe but doesn't.
Ben, that's pretty awesome.
I mean, very good read.
You know, if you really read it that way and that's the interpretation you decide to run with, it moves Dr. Horrible from a really awesome movie to extraordinarily powerful. I don't even know. I can't put into words, Ben, but you're right.
Yeah.
This is, I should show this to my youth group.
You should. It really gives you something to wrestle with, even though I think we would come to different conclusions, obviously, than Joss Whedon. His atheism is not so prominent where he's going to ram it down your throat. What he says is, I'm not sure what the answer is. I believe that it is that there is no hope. Mm-hmm. But the question's out there. He doesn't answer it for us, and I think that's really powerful.
It is. Yeah, leaving it unresolved. Usually I don't like that, but that made this a totally different movie than it could have been.
Yeah, I think the only other way, you know, that you can read some of the ending is that good and evil exist, but evil is stronger. Evil triumphs, and the result is confusion and numbness, and we're just lost without direction.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty good. I mean, I see it as, you know, he had already kind of been sensing that this darkness was going to be inside of him, but he was trying to fight it. Like we had talked about, we saw that Penny was kind of his hope, and then he lost her. There's a song called So They Say.
Yeah.
And that kind of, that almost spoils it in a sense. There's a line where it says, I think Dr. Horrible even says, there will be no happy ending.
Yeah.
And I mean, that might be how it happens for, I mean, you're saying we haven't seen the resurrection, and I really like that interpretation, but what if his only hope was Penny? She's gone. Now he's just left with this life of seeking after evil. He thought that this is how he would feel worthwhile and significant. And you see in the scene at the end where he's robbing the bank, he doesn't look happy. He's not happy that he's finally got what he wanted. He was seeking after this thing, and he got it, and it left him feeling empty. It did not fulfill him.
I think where there's hope is that we do see in kind of the end montage during the last song that Captain Hammer's power really is broken. He doesn't recover from this.
Because he went to therapy or whatever?
He went to therapy. And then he's unavailable for comment for the first time ever, it says in the news headline. Mm-hmm. So Captain Hammer's, at least for now, out of the picture, which seems to me to give Dr. Horrible some hope.
And the fan club that was following Captain Hammer now has Dr. Horrible shirts on.
Yes.
So
the fan club's pretty great.
Yeah. But so Dr. Horrible, he finally got what he wanted, but it doesn't really matter because he doesn't have the girl that he of his dreams, basically.
Yeah. So what's your take on it, Matt?
Well, I mean, that's kind of what I'm talking about. I mean,
okay.
I think what we're saying, obviously, and we've talked about this before, is the origin, a really awesome origin story for a supervillain. So we always think, we like bad guys that have multi-layers. Now, we don't want just somebody who's evil for evil's sake. And that's Dr. Horrible. He had two roads in front of him, to follow good, Penny, or to follow bad. And he was almost forced down a path. He almost didn't have a choice.
So do you think that in Dr. Horrible 2, he would be the villain?
Well, do we want to talk about Dr. Horrible 2 right now? Sure. Do I think
it's speculation. We know Dr. Horrible 2 is in the works.
Yes, and we also know, casting news-wise, it sounds like Felicia Day is going to be a part of the cast.
Interesting. So we could get the resurrection. My metaphor could get even better.
It could. And I almost don't want her to be a part of the cast, unless she's like playing like an Obi-Wan character where she appears ghostly.
Or flashbacks.
Yeah, flashbacks would be okay, but her death is so important to this movie and to the character. I don't want to lose that.
Yeah.
Will he be the villain? No. I think if there's a Dr. Horrible 2, I think we'd have to see his redemption.
So do I. I think he would start out as a villain, mm-hmm. but ultimately be redeemed.
Yeah, definitely.
Down the road.
And so if you ask me, how do I see this film? I see it ending before the redemption. And I didn't quite pick up on, I didn't make it Christian-y the way that you did. But I do think it's awesome. But I think he is, you see him not being satisfied in this life that he's wanted, and in the very last scene, totally lost. And when you go that far down, you can only go up from there. I think what we don't see is after the credits, a redemption has to happen.
Yeah. I think that to take a more philosophical point on this, the other thing I wanted to comment on here was the role of postmodernism in Dr. Horrible. We've talked before about postmodernism. Either this show or the Life Report, I don't remember. But we've talked about it a bit in our podcasting career. Mm-hmm. And how, in my view, postmodernism isn't in and of itself a bad thing. Mm-hmm. It can actually be a good thing. And I think this is an example of it. Mm-hmm. It deconstructs our traditional view of heroism, of who is and isn't a hero. So it really challenges our preconceptions, but it doesn't relativize everything. Good and evil still very much exists in this world.
And speaking of who is a hero and who isn't a hero, one of the common traits of a hero in a movie or a comic book or anything is that they refuse to kill. So
yes.
MacGyver doesn't kill.
Ooh.
Batman doesn't kill.
So you're saying that.
But listen to this. You know, when we talked about it a little bit before, but when Dr. Horrible first got this order to assassinate somebody, I think he said something along the lines of, he's more sophisticated than that. That's not his style. He did not want to kill somebody. But Captain Hammer, by basically taking advantage of Penny, pushed him over the edge. And now Dr. Horrible has a brand new day. You know, as
and we see that Captain Hammer was more than willing to kill Dr. Horrible.
Well, yeah, that's exactly where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
And so Dr. Horrible gets, you know, pushed almost into, all right, I can kill somebody. I can kill Captain Hammer because he is already a bad guy. And so the one person he's willing to kill is somebody who he knows is actually secretly evil.
Yes.
Then when it finally comes down to it, he doesn't actually have the opportunity, but Captain Hammer does have the opportunity. And he, without even thinking about it, is willing to murder immediately.
Yep.
So when we look at who's good, who's bad, who's the hero, who's the villain, I think that you would have a hard argument if you tried to say Captain Hammer was the hero of this movie.
Yeah, there's no way.
No.
No way. Though I would say that Penny is the hero of the movie.
Kind of the Messiah.
Yes.
She should have made our Messiah list.
Maybe we need to do another episode.
So
top five Messiahs revisited.
Yeah.
So, Matt, I've told you that my favorite song in the show is My Eyes. I think it's powerful. I think it sums up what this movie is about. It gives me chills every time I listen to it. What's your favorite
one? Well, I do like that song.
It's a great song.
That's probably would be one of my top three. I really like, there's two other songs I really like. Brand New Day.
That's great.
And I love the beginning of it. And I love Freeze Ray. So I guess if I have to pick one, Freeze Ray is my number one. Brand New Day, number two.
So Matt, I have a question for you.
I have a question for you.
Okay, you go first.
No, I don't have a question for you.
Okay. The title of Dr. Horrible is Dr. Horrible's Sing-Along Blog.
Yes.
I think we would be
Remiss.
We would be doing our audience a disservice if we did not sing along to one of these songs.
I think you might know the words a little bit better than me.
That's okay, but I think we should do your favorite one.
Okay, good. Freeze Ray. I could never do Brand New Day. Do that beginning.
Oh yeah, awesome. It's too fast.
Just play like the first 15 seconds of Brand New Day.
Okay.
Disappeared as a moral dilemma, cause at first it was weird, though I swore to eliminate the worst of the plague that devoured humanity. It's true, I was vague on the how, so how can it be that you have shown me the light?
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
It's a great song. Yeah, the entire soundtrack's phenomenal.
Hey, before we sing,
yeah,
let's sing, and then I have a few quotes that I thought were funny from the movie.
Okay, and then we should also talk, we talked a bit about the sequel, but there's a couple other things I want to touch on.
Okay.
Before we wrap up. Ready?
I'm ready. Here we are, Freeze Ray, the opening song of Dr.
Song
Horrible.
Of Dr. Horrible's love, secret love for Penny. Mm-hmm. You ready, Matt?
I don't know the words. I'm going to try, though.
Oh, my gosh.
Here we go.
Laundry day. See you there. Under things. Tumbling. Wanna say. Love your hair. Here I go. Mumbling. With my Freeze Ray, I will stop.
The world.
With my Freeze Ray, I will find the time to find the words to tell you how you make me feel. What's the phrase? Like a fool, kind of sick, special needs. Anyways, with my Freeze Ray, I will stop the pain. Not a death ray or an ice beam, that's all Johnny Snow. I just think you need time to know that I'm the guy to make it real. The feelings you don't dare to feel, I'll bend the world to our will, and we'll make time stand still.
That's pretty good.
It's a dance number here.
Do you want to dance?
I'm just going to dance in my chair a bit.
That's good.
That's the plan. Rule the world. You and me.
any day. Love your hair.
What?
No, I just love the air.
Love the air.
Anyway, with my freeze ray, I will stop.
So I love that line where it's like, rule the world, you and me. That's what he wants.
Yes.
He doesn't want to just rule the world or, you know, be a conqueror for evil's sake. Again, he wants to be with her.
Yeah.
That's this love story is all Romeo and Juliet, man.
Totally. Interesting side note, bit of trivia for you, Matt. So in that song, there's a line about, he's talking about his freeze ray, and he says it's not a death ray or an ice beam.
That's all Johnny Snow?
In season 6 of Buffy, three characters invent a freeze ray that is an ice beam.
Oh, interesting.
So a bit of a shout out to another one of Joss Whedon's.
Speaking of ice beam, I think, you know, it was pretty funny when he was talking about Johnny Snow and how Johnny Snow thinks that Dr. Horrible is his nemesis. He's like, you're not my nemesis. Captain Hammer's my nemesis.
It's great.
Oh, and what's the song that happens right before Captain Hammer tries to kill Dr. Horrible? What's that song title?
It is Slipping.
Yeah, Slipping. Okay, so this Slipping. It's really obvious about how this is the moment he's slipping into his horribleness, his evilness.
Yes.
But there's a line in the song where he says, I would give anything not to have her see.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like all over the place. He wants to be good. He wants to at least have this one person see the good in him. But, man.
The tension. He's walking that line so fine during the entire movie.
Yeah, man. It's painful. I feel for Dr. Horrible.
Yes.
So.
You had a couple quotes you wanted to read.
Yes. When he finds out that Captain Hammer is coming to the laundromat and he has to leave quickly.
Yeah.
He lifts up his arm to look at his watch, which isn't there. So he says, oh, goodness, look at my wrist.
It's time to go.
Yeah, I like that one. And then when Captain Hammer is trying to talk about how awesome he is, he says, justice has a name. And the name it has, besides justice, is Captain Hammer. I like
that's actually the guy who's introducing Captain
Hammer. Oh, really? It's not Captain Hammer?
It is not.
No. I just wrote Captain Hammer there, so I must
be. I love the part where he has his cue cards when he's starting his speech. And I hate the homeless. Flips the cue card. This problem that plagues our city. Just brilliant.
Let's see. Yeah, I mean, and then even though this isn't funny, Penny's last words, Captain Hammer saved us.
Chilling.
Yeah.
Bad. Really great stuff.
So, do you have any others?
Not quotes, but what I wanted to mention is that just kind of makes this whole film even more awesome. If you have the DVD...
Oh, yes.
You need to listen to the commentary track.
Not just... Yeah, I mean... Okay, go ahead.
Because the commentary track is not a commentary track. It is a musical.
Commentary. The musical.
Commentary.
So...
It's so great.
Let me set the stage. There I was. How many months ago was this? 3-4 months ago?
It was probably August.
Okay, longer than that then.
Yeah.
So Ben says, I just got the Blu-ray of Dr. Horrible. You have to come watch it. So we watched it all the way through. I was obviously amazed and in awe of how awesome it was. And we immediately, that night... watch the commentary, and so we watched the whole movie over with this musical track. It was awesome.
It's very, very
funny. I actually
haven't
seen the commentary since the last time we watched it, but I have the soundtrack to both commentary, the musical, and Dr. Horrible Sing Along blog, which, speaking of, if you've been enjoying this music that we're playing today, or if you watch the movie and don't have the soundtrack, you need to go buy the soundtrack.
Absolutely.
It's on iTunes. I'm sure you can buy it somewhere else, but get the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Worth it.
For sure. And then the other things I wanted to mention is that there is a graphic novel that goes along.
Which I haven't read.
It fills in some of the backstory. It talks about Penny's backstory. Moist, who we didn't really talk about, but is Dr. Horrible's kind of henchman.
It's a psychic.
Roommate, sidekick guy.
Played by Howard from Big Bang Theory.
Yes. So it gives his backstory. We get there's a story in there about the evil League of Evil. So we get to meet some of the characters that you mentioned there a little more. You get a little bit more in terms of the world that this all exists in. So very much worth checking out. And then they just released a book that I have not been able to pick up yet, though I want to soon. A behind-the-scenes book that you know talks about more of the production behind Dr. Horrible and also includes sheet music.
Oh.
And I play the piano.
Very good.
So, Matt, I think that we're going to have a sing-along time in our future.
All right. I play the drums.
Oh,
nice.
We need the Dr. Horrible band. Awesome. Oh,
that's good. Ben, speaking of behind the scenes, we didn't really talk about how this movie got made. We know that Whedon obviously made it during the writer's strike, but did we mention that he funded it himself?
I think we briefly did, but it's worth talking about again.
$200,000 was all it cost to make this great, great movie.
Yeah.
And he had total freedom to just do whatever he wanted. And now, because of the success of Dr. Horrible, he's looking at more internet-based projects, even an internet-based production studio where he can just do whatever he wants. He'll obviously get more funding. He won't have to pay for everything himself. But
Fox won't cancel him after 14
exactly.
episodes?
Exactly. So Dr. Horrible is just the beginning of what I think is going to be a whole studio of awesome products.
That would be so awesome. Yeah, what if he did revive Firefly?
I just read in the article that was posted on our Facebook by Max that, still, his greatest regret is that he doesn't get to go to that ship and work with those people.
Yep.
Still, he can't let it go, but I'm not complaining.
None of the rest of us can either.
Firefly is coming back. It has to. There's too many fans that love it, and there's too many people that were a part of the production that want it back. It's going to be back.
For sure. All right, Matt, should we get to some listener feedback?
Is that it? We're done with Dr. Horrible?
That's it for Dr. Horrible.
We don't have anything else?
We talked for an hour, man.
Wow. I mean, I just feel like there's so much awesome things to say.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, let's listen to some listener feedback, and if I have more I want to say about Dr. Horrible, I will continue.
Sounds good. All right, so we have...
Sorry, I was supposed to say something.
thanks for covering me there, bro. I'm trying to bring up the email. So the first thing we had, we have a new listener who's been interacting with us some on Facebook named Clark. And Clark has called me out over my hatred of Star Trek.
What? I didn't read this. Where was this on?
You responded to it.
Oh, when was it?
April 11th.
Okay, read it and I'll probably remember.
Okay. He says, Ben, you got to give Star Trek a little more credit for its impact on the sci-fi genre. Those original shows were classics. Who cares about the crappy sets and special effects? The stories and characters were the greatest. I would put Captain Kirk and Mr. Spock at the top of the list of all-time great sci-fi characters, followed by Darth Vader, Han Solo, and Luke Skywalker.
I do remember this.
Ooh. Clark, first of all, welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Glad you're listening. I've enjoyed your comments. You put up a few others on Facebook, so thank you for listening and interacting. But you're wrong on this one, man.
What? You don't think... Okay, I don't know... Kirk is good, but Spock is awesome. You can't...
Above Vader, Han Solo, and Luke?
Did he put him above or put him next to?
He said, followed by Darth Vader.
When I read that, I kind of thought maybe he just meant this group of people are on equal standing.
No, I think he would put that... That's at least my reading, so agree with that.
You would be hard-pressed to diminish the importance of Kirk and Spock.
Yes, as far as influence goes... I agree with Clark.
Yeah.
But to put him above Star Wars, can't quite go there.
I think overall, if I had to choose a side, I would have to go with Star Wars. But I do like Star Trek more than you by far.
You do. I recognize I'm in the minority on this one.
That's okay.
Speaking of rants that I've had, someone has finally responded to my Superman rant.
Oh, yes. Who?
A new listener named James Jameson, or Jimmy, I guess he prefers to be called.
You didn't fill me in on this. Thanks a lot.
Sorry. I had a busy weekend.
Whatever.
Okay. Says, Ben, on multiple occasions I've heard you express your dislike for Superman. I too share that feeling about the Man of Steel. Okay. So someone responds and they agree with me. Okay. Well done.
No, that's not bad. We want some response on who likes him and who doesn't.
I think for people who do not particularly care for him, the source of this disdain is his omnipotence and inability to be hurt.
Mm-hmm.
However, I am somewhat intrigued by the series Smallville. I've only watched about half the first season, but based on what I've seen so far, I'd have to say that I like the imagination of Clark Kent. He is a high school kid who has not yet fully developed his power, so I think that definitely makes it more interesting. And then he goes on to talk a little bit more about the series and ask me if I've seen it. I have not. Have you seen Smallville?
No, I haven't. And always around Black Friday, the Smallville DVDs go on sale, and I've thought a couple different years, I should pick these up, but...
I'm interested in it.
I am definitely interested. This is the last season, so I've been toying with the idea of buying the entire collection when it comes out, if I can find it someplace cheap. But a better idea might be just to go through Netflix.
I would say watch the first season on Netflix, and if you really like it and you think you're going to want to watch the whole thing, then go ahead and buy the box set.
It's a big commitment, though. 10 years. We're in the 10th season right now. So I will definitely watch it at some point in my life, but I don't know how or in what capacity or when.
Yeah. So Colin has also emailed us this week.
Oh, really?
As usual.
And I didn't hear from
him. No shocker. So.
So if you send it to feedback at sci-fichristianpodcast.com.
Did I forget to forward you everything this week? I'm sorry, man.
Sometimes Ben forwards to me and sometimes he doesn't. So I'll be surprised. What did Colin say?
Okay. I actually don't know if I read the whole thing because, like I said, I had a busy week.
Okay.
So... hey guys, right, first things first. I got a bit confused at the start. Well, at the start was, I got to start over.
Okay.
Colin, I just butchered your email.
You read it over, because I was going to say something. I forgot to mention when we were talking about Dr. Horrible that Scott Herzog, again from the Sci-Fi Diner podcast, had emailed me something that I posted the link to on our Facebook page. Did you see this, the 8-bit version of Dr. Horrible?
I watched it briefly last night.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. If you like old Nintendo games, like if you played them back when they were new like I did, you will love this. It's an imagining of if Dr. Horrible was an old Nintendo game. Somebody just did the animation in an 8-bit style and made 8-bit music, like Nintendo style.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome. I only made it through the first act before I had to stop watching, but it's pretty interesting. I would check
definitely.
It out.
Okay, I'm going to try this again. I passed reading in grade school, so we'll try this again.
Okay.
I think there might be a word missing in his sentence, so I will paraphrase
It could be his accent.
It could be. So, Colin, I'm sorry I'm butchering your email, but basically what he's getting at is that my dog was howling in the last episode, and Colin was confused as to whether or not that was truly the dog
or Bigfoot.
You singing.
Me?
You.
Colin, what? How dare you?
He says, I think it subliminally triggered my dog to howl along.
Wait, have I sung before? Do I have a bad rap?
I don't know. We have sung. We've been singing a lot on the show lately.
On the life part, not here, though.
We just sang an entire song on the show.
That's true.
No more listeners.
No more listeners.
Let's get to Matt's theories, which are always entertaining.
Yes.
Think of the hobbits that were recently found on a Pacific isle. I did not hear about this, Colin.
Okay.
There were hobbits found? The common theory is that due to microevolution, they evolved to suit the deeply forested ecosphere, which is why they... to quote the old Max, stayed small. In this instance, with the plethora of primates on the planet, now the immense propagation of forest in North America and the vastness of the area could result in microevolution, leading to a yet undiscovered species of primate. To quote the old maxim, nature abhors a vacuum, but he is definitely not interdimensional.
Okay, well, that's fair enough.
Oh, and Matt, still no email, my friend. Plus, I am not on Facebook.
No.
So you promised to email Colin.
I emailed him, and he emailed me back. Maybe it was a different Colin. Is that possible?
Well, maybe this happened after.
No, I mean we've exchanged emails.
Well, he sent this email like a week ago.
Oh, okay. So hopefully, Colin, if I emailed the wrong Colin, you should probably let me know, because that would be embarrassing.
Yeah, it would be. I feel bad for completely butchering that email. Note to self: read emails before you attempt to read them out loud on the air.
You had mentioned a new listener, Jimmy. I also wanted to give a shout out to two of my friends who I found out were listening recently. My friend Reggie and my friend Jake.
Hey, Reggie and Jake.
They're out there listening. And one time, did I tell you last week that I saw Prestige? Did I talk about that on the show? So when I went there to go watch Prestige, I walked in the door and bam, they were listening to the Sci-Fi Christian. My
That's
own voice
so cool.
was being propelled throughout the house.
I love it. And mine too.
Mostly me.
Well.
Not really. Okay.
Last bit of listener feedback.
Okay, then I want to say my synopsis of Dr. Horrible.
Okay. Talon, who we've not heard from for a while.
Yeah, what the heck, Talon?
He's back.
But I did get his... missionary
Yeah,
powers.
That's what I'm going to read. He has two top five superpowers for the mission field: omnipresence, teleportation, bone claws, probability mutation. I'm not sure what that one is. People will be much more likely to accept the gospel if everything you did had a much higher chance of
succeeding.
Didn't
he give an example of long shot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wasn't reading those examples.
Oh.
And then empathy. Then you would be able to know whether or not the crowd was reacting well to your
message.
That's good. So, good list, and then his top five overall: bone claws, teleportation, invulnerability, power mimicry, and elemental manipulation.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, you and Colin both brought up bone claws. I don't.
You mean Talon?
Who did I say, Colin?
Yeah,
Talon. I don't know if I see the strength in bone claws.
They're kind of cool,
but there's so many powers to choose from.
And don't they hurt? Him, like every time.
Yeah, doesn't Wolverine kind of like just cry a little?
I didn't say bone claws. I said bone manipulation.
Oh, okay,
big difference.
Whatever. Okay.
All right. What is your synopsis of Dr. Horrible?
Are we moving towards our conclusion of our whole show?
We are.
Here's how I see it.
Final thoughts.
In the end, when it really came down to it, Dr. Horrible and Billy were actually two different people, and in the end, Dr. Horrible won, but Billy lost.
For now.
For now.
Interesting reading. I'm not so sure that I would agree that Dr. Horrible fully won, because I think that he's putting on a mask in the final scenes and that his true self is the one we see in the final shot right before the credits.
I agree with that. That's the true self. But these two personalities that he made, like, for example, how, you know, before he did evil, he had to change into his costume down by the stairs. I think in the same way that Bruce Wayne uses Batman or vice versa, Batman uses Bruce Wayne as an alias. I think in order to do this bad, he had to create this personality.
Interesting thought. People, we want to hear your thoughts on Dr. Horrible. You can email us at feedback@scifichristianpodcast.com or
call us at 612-4121-SFC. If you're out of the United States, send us an audio file to that feedback at scifichristianpodcast.com.
And
so just in case Ben doesn't want to send it to me, you can always write me personally at matt@scifichristianpodcast.com.
Yeah, that works too.
Okay.
And then next week, everyone, clones episode.
Revisited.
Because
So we've already had some listener feedback, but not as much as we did initially. Is that correct, Ben?
I got one last night that I haven't shared with you yet.
Excellent. Okay. So, but if you haven't yet and you've been a listener, just send us in any comment because this will be our first ever listener feedback episode.
Yeah.
So our entire conversation is going to be dependent on your emails, your phone calls, your audio files. So please, if you just have a few things you want to say about clones or anything that we didn't mention
in
the last episode.
We got some good comments already, and I think we've got a ton of material to go already, but we want more.
We do. So, I'm pretty excited to come back and talk about it again.
So next week, clones episode, and we will figure out what we're doing after that.
All right.
All right, Matt. Great episode. I love Dr. Horrible. We need to do more episodes like this.
Yeah, I mean, typically I don't like spoilers, but this is too good not to fully talk about.
Every so often. It's good to do one like this.
I guess that's all from here. I'm Matt Anderson.
I'm Ben DiBono.
And we are the Sci-Fi Christians, signing off.